saying it was unfortunate? Is that how you put it?
His method of working required the people he'd been working with. Second place, Washington's office was pure animosity to him.
Is that, and why was that?
Well, I think it started at the top. I think the top people at that time decided that the main thing was the budget, and the main thing about Von Braun was to start new and bigger and greater things, and they couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's silence him. That's my opinion.
The timing was wrong.
The timing was wrong, and the situation was wrong. And send him up there with the idea. Let me tell you a story about sending him up there that he told me once.
All right.
I don't think this is publishable, but anyway.
Well, okay. And you tell me, you know,
first day he went into a great big meeting up there that he heard about, and they were discussing various things. He walked in a little late, as he always did. And when he walked in, the room got kind of quiet. So Werner said, I looked around at, I forget who he was, he said, running the meeting, he says, I am welcome here, aren't I? And they said, no, you're not.
Is that right? No, it was just not meant for a headquarters hierarchy meeting?
It was a headquarters hierarchy meeting.
Oh, okay.
It's just that they have decided they didn't want Von Braun up there. You know, it wasn't long he went to Fairchild.
I know. What, 2 years or less?
He called on pretty quick up there how welcome he was. Mm. He just was not welcome. The people up there running it at that time wanted somebody who just slavishly did the lower budget like they were told and didn't make any waves, didn't start anything, didn't have any ideas. That's not Werner's way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt sorry for him. He must have suffered miserably up there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who I blame for this? His wife.
Is that right?
I don't think he'd ever gone up there if it hadn't been for her desire to get out of this little town and get into the society and the things.
Mm-hmm.
My opinion. Mm-hmm. She always brought that up.
She was just not all that thrilled about being here. And here's
she never did like Huntsville.
Habsburg princess.
He was a big man in a little town. She wanted to be a big man in a big town.
I got you.
And we got to know him pretty well because my son and his daughter used to date each other.
Oh, is that right?
He took her on camping on trips to Myrtle Beach and things like that.
Margaret Iris.
Iris.
Iris was the second daughter, wasn't she?
Yeah, Iris was not the smart one or the brilliant one. She was the pretty one.
Right.
But Margaret was the brilliant one. And from that meeting on, Von Braun was rather crushed.
Mm.
He says, Lee, how do I handle something like this? I don't think I gave him any very good wisdom.
Mm.
I mean, obviously what happened to him right then, he had gotten into something where he was not going to be happy.
I have talked to Jim Daniels recently, and he was up there with Von Braun for 6 months or so.
Yes, and here's his viewpoint.
And he felt much the same. He said, now, part of it was owing to politics and wasn't personal, but part of it was personal. But he said some of these, I mean, the Office of Manned Spaceflight kind of wanted to hash out some of its deals before the NASA command authority, anybody in that line of command. I guess Von Braun, he was kind of off to the side, but in a way he was in the line. And they want, whether it was Von Braun or somebody else, they kind of wanted to hash some things out before getting in the command. And yet he said, look, I'm not racist in any way, but he said some of the Jewish element up there.
Is this Von Braun?
Yeah, this is Jim Daniels saying that some of the Jewish element during the program and during Von Braun's years up there, they couldn't forget Hitler's Germany. They just couldn't put that out. From Jules Scheer.
Julius.
Julius.
Julian
Shear, right, the head PAO guy, and I think George Lowe
George is
Jewish.
Always claimed to be a close to have gotten. He said, first time I met George Lowe said, the first time I met Von Braun, I was prepared not to like him, but we became the best of friends.
Is that right?
And I think that's probably true in his case.
Anyway, I think there are another couple of Jewish guys that Jim said that wasn't. That was just a part of it.
Silverstein?
Yes. Abe Silverstein. He mentioned him. But he said otherwise, in some cases, it was just some jealousy, envy, that who did NASA have to turn to go before Congress when they wanted to charm the pants off of them, you know, at budget time? They went to Von Braun, and some people resented that.
But there's another thing. They didn't go to any place often enough. They were prepared to sit back with a lesser budget. You know, Von Braun was always selling something. The period he went up there was when he was selling Mars.
Is that? Right.
And they did not want that brought up at all. It's hard for Von Braun to restrain from bringing up the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they held that against him. They really did. He talked to me about that. Von Braun used to have unloading sessions. He'd say, I'd like to hear your views on something, and then he'd tell his views. That's where it always went. He was kind of curious what you thought about his views more than hearing your views.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some sessions like that several times. One of them was about his Washington trip. And I felt sorry for him. I really did, because I didn't think he deserved this. He did such a good job for us, I thought. Didn't have to do it.
Right. Are you the one who told me years ago about Dr. Von Braun coming back for a visit to Marshall, maybe during this tour of field centers that he did in connection with his new job, including, you know, JPL and Houston? And somebody asked him how he was doing, and he said, I'm living the life of a mushroom. Now, that's become kind of a cliche story. I mean, you hear it. A lot of people tell it, but in their own connection. But, you know, I'm kept in the dark, and every now and then somebody opens the door and throws a shovel full of manure in, and that if I ever dare to stick my head up, it's in danger of being chopped off.
I've heard the story. But whether I told you or not, I don't know. I've heard it. I really often felt so sorry for him to be put into that environment after all he did at Marshall. And I tell you, the people, the Germans here were pretty well crushed with his departure. They knew that was the end for them. Of course, it all come about the end of their line anyway.
Sure.
But they were pretty well crushed by that decision. People.
Now, that was an idea. I mean, that was not Von Braun's idea necessarily to go to Washington. He didn't initiate it.
He tried to talk him out of it a little bit.
Okay.
He couldn't. In fact, some of his Germans have said to me, why did he accept it? Why did he go? Well, his answer to that is, I didn't have much choice. He said, they tell me I'm going. And I think that's the way it was.
Is that? Uh-huh.
I felt so sorry for him. And his wife was always pushing. She thought it was the best thing that ever happened. That's unfortunate because she should feel that way because that influenced him.
But getting up there in the power capital of the universe and all that glitter and glamour,
she didn't realize the circumstances of what she did.
Sure. And she was up there in Virginia horse country, which I understand she loves.
She lived down there just south of the Capitol and just loved it.
Right. They lived, were they in Georgetown? Or
Alexandria down there.
Oh, Alexandria. Oh, of course, where she still is, right.
Their daughters went their separate ways, and their son never seemed to mount an awful lot, and at last I heard of him.
That's what I've heard. And he's doing a menial work, I understand, as a clerk or something.
And I think it all kind of came apart. To one of the family hung together under all the circumstances, but they did. Love must have been there.
Do you think those stresses and strains may have contributed all to the onset later of cancer that he had?
I have no way of answering that. I don't know.
That would be,
I don't know much about cancer.
Highly speculative, wouldn't it? Yeah.
I'm sure it had a lot to do with his frame of mind. Whether it had to do with his health or not, I don't know.
Right. Do you have a feel for how he felt during, how he felt and how he fared during his Fairchild years?
Well, he was awfully close to Ed Yule, the president of Fairchild, and I think very happy with him, working with him.
How do you spell that? E-U-E-L-L or something? Ed Yule?
I thought it started with a U. Maybe U-E-L or U-H-L or something like that. I don't know, you know. Ed U period.
Right. Okay.
I don't know how you spell Yule. I'm sure you can find that.
Of course. He was president of Fairchild.
Yeah, I'm bound to be in one of these books.
Oh, of course. And they were friends?
Very close friends. Yeah. Before he ever was.
Okay.
So when Ed saw the situation up there, he invited him to come down and be his chief of R&D. That was a friendship type thing. Von Braun probably, I don't know this, probably wasn't great at that job. Because he didn't have his own crew, and overall R&D, which wouldn't handle like he handles things, it'd be hard for him to do, I think.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing. I wouldn't think he'd been great, but he stayed in a little while.
And made the most money for his family that he ever did.
And I think that was what Ed Yule had in mind. Ed was a nice guy, just a nice guy. He and Von Braun were very, very close. And
gotcha.
I think that's a great thing that happened. Did I ever tell you the story of how I joined NASA? I mean, joined Von Braun?
I don't think so. Please do.
You know, when they separated Von Braun's group out, it pretty much was the German people that came out.
Much
of NASA and a few others, but mostly all the key people were German people. And several times Von Braun and I had talked about a subject which he found very interesting. He said, "Lee, what do you think of my organization? It's headed by all German people. What's the American people going to think about all this?" And I said, "Frankly, Werner, not like I do. I don't like it too well." He said, "Well, I do." I said, "I don't think I can think you can do is very slowly infiltrate American people into some of these jobs as the old people get early. I don't see you firing them."
Sure.
And he said, "Yeah, but I feel like that's going to be so slow that it isn't going to solve the problem." And I think we kind of left it there. Then one day I was living on Panorama Drive up on Montesano.
Uh-huh.
And I was down over the back of my end, property cutting brush down so I could clear my view.
Mm-hmm.
And who comes climbing down the hill but Von Braun?
Is that right?
And he says, "Lee, we have known each other for some time. Why don't you come join us?"
So now you were at ABMA.
I was in the military then, see, so I was being sent back to a military job instead of being transferred with the NASA.
You didn't go with NASA, right.
So at that point, I retired and joined NASA.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never regretted that. Some of my best jobs really were with Werner. I was the manager of Saturn 1, Saturn 1B, and Saturn 5. It's hard to beat that. Deputy Director of Apollo.
Those are tough jobs. While you may regret one decision
I don't know whether I would do that any different or not, because I couldn't believe it would happen like Patrones did, but maybe it would.
Right.
Anyway, that was the way he did. I couldn't believe he'd come down there. I joined him right away and never regretted that. It's always been a good relationship.
Yeah,
I enjoyed working for him. And I started to say, when he talked about this, he said, "Now we've got to get some people into our American people into our hierarchy here." So that put me into it. I can remember going to his staff meetings when there were only two American-born people there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And so there was this obvious imbalance
Because see, it's politically Manchis, wasn't good. Already all Germans, they were moved intact.
Right.
Most of his staff people were. He had some staff people that were American, but they weren't really high enough to join staff meetings, you know.
Right. A couple of small questions. You indicated that he was always late. He tended to be late a few minutes.
Always late.
Is that
it's his method.
Oh, is that right?
I think so. He didn't say so, but I would say so.
Now, was that, why was that? To make a grand entrance or to let people talk among themselves before he got there? Or?
I hate to say it, but I think it had a little to do with the grand entrance. Let me give you an example. I had a party at my house one night. Von Braun and Rhea were invited. And by the time they got there, the party was going full blast. Everybody had a drink or two, going pretty fast. And the talk was almost deafening, you know. You almost couldn't hear each other think. About that time, the doorbell rang, and I let Von Braun in. Do you remember, I don't know if you remember my house up there or not. You come in the front door, then you enter the big double door of the living room.
Yes.
So Von Braun walked into the...
On Bannister we're talking about. Yeah, okay.
No, not Bannister. No. Panorama.
Oh, Panorama, of course.
And,
all right.
And Von Braun entered that double door in the living room. That whole house fell silent. I'll never forget that. Waiting for him to say something.
Is that right?
Americans and Germans, everybody, as soon as they saw him, everybody just quit talking.
No kidding.
And I always remembered that.
Did he, I mean, that's kind of awkward, isn't it? He may have loved
awkward,
it. Did he say something?
I forget what he said, but it was not awkward.
Right.
I mean, he knows how to handle those situations.
Uh-huh.
And he did it very well, I forget how. And it's just amazing.
How much do you attribute regarding his poise, his savoir-faire, you know, his knowing what to do or say at the right time to his aristocratic upbringing?
I thought of that. Must have had a lot to do with that, because he always seemed to know how to fit. And I think that's what that would teach him. I'm just guessing.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't imagine he'd get that anyplace else. You don't get that from engineering.
No, no.
But he's always so good at fitting in. I looked at some pictures last night trying to think of what might interest him. And I noticed picture after picture with presidents. You know, so he just seems to be at ease with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be his background, I
think. Right.
You know, his father was a baron.
Oh, yes. I'll have to ask somebody else, perhaps. Is it the oldest son who inherits the baron's title?
That's right.
I don't know whether...
That's not Von Braun.
That's not, I know, that was Sigismund.
Sigismund, yeah.
And I'll have to find, do the younger sons become counts, or, I mean, was Von Braun, did he ever have a title that he didn't use? Or
not that I don't know. I really don't know the answer. It's interesting, but I don't know.
I'll find out.
Von Braun is one of a kind. There'd never been anybody manage a group of people like him, I don't think. I don't know how you describe his management. I've had a lot of people ask me over the years, how do you describe the way Don Braun managed? I don't know how to tell them except to tell them this one story. I may have told you, I don't know. But after he been in business here for about a year or something, I don't know how much it was, his organization grew to a pretty good size organization, and there were 38 people reporting directly to Von Braun.
And where was this now?
This is right here.
Oh, this was here, okay.
This is when he first took over the NASA Center. 38 people reporting directly, you know, right to him.
Oh, that's...
And American people, the hierarchy of the American people says, Werner, this is not the way you run an organization. You've got to cut down the number of people working directly. Well, they finally convinced him that he had to do something about that. So Von Braun decided to have all of his lab chiefs report to one person who then reported to him. That was a step. And he didn't tell this to anybody, but we all learned it. Anyway, we had the staff meeting, and Von Braun started talking. And all, there were two Americans in there, and all the rest of us. After we listened a while, we all realized what he was getting at. He was going to have all the lab chiefs report to one person. And I, I realized it right away, and the rest of them realized it. All of a sudden, all the lab chiefs started saying, well, this will never work because, and so on.
Yeah.
I want you to know that conversation went on for over 2 hours. Werner'd sit there like this. Yes, yeah. And when he finally, after 2 hours, when they finally wore themselves out, he says, does anybody else have any comments? No? Well, then I think I'll go ahead and do what I said. I know there was never another peep.
Is that right?
Let them talk yourselves out. And they finally go agree with him. That's all he's doing.
They had their say.
That's the way he managed.
And that's decisiveness, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you, otherwise, how did he run a meeting? Was there a lot of give and take and shouting?
A lot of give and take.
Pounding the table.
If Von Braun asks a question, how do you feel about such and such, you'll find he usually answers it himself. What he really wants to know is, how do you feel about his solution? And he'll listen to that. He'll listen as long as somebody adamantly wants to say something.
Mm-hmm.
He listens out. Meetings are long, much longer than they should be, because he listens.
Mm-hmm.
But he listens until you do it his way. And he doesn't force it. That group loved him, believed in him,
sure.
And eventually come around to it. That's all there was to it. And I tell you, the Americans that fell into that group became the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Mm.
First place, they had a lot of faith in him.
Sure.
He was usually right. And we all listened. He usually had to say, I have my say, but we end up doing, I can't think of a case we didn't do it his way.
You know, you can use the word manager or leader. I mean, he obviously had some natural leadership gifts, abilities there.
He must have.
Both, whether God-given or developed, whatever, probably some natural leadership ability from his upbringing or wherever.
I think so.
Interesting.
One thing Von Braun used to talk to me about, and I could never attribute to what he said, how are we going to convince the American public that the space program is something they need to do and be foremost in? And it's going to cost money, and how do we convince them? And he'd go over that with me time and again, because I guess I was one of the few Americans there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hate to say it like this, but I think about the main thing I ever said to him, what you're doing is the best thing I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's in Colliers, he's in everything you can think of, and he's doing the best job of anybody I can imagine. I didn't know how to ask him to do anything better, anything different.
He
didn't always tell. Maybe that's what he wanted to hear, I don't know. But talking about convincing the American public, I can't imagine one of us convinced them as well as he did.
And he had this salesmanship ability, didn't he?
Great salesman.
I would think, too, and he probably made many more speeches than he would have liked to do, but he saw that as a way to sell the program.
And he was so good at it. He could make a speech on any subject and get some other points across every time.
Mm-hmm.
He was really good. I admire Von Braun. I've always liked him.
Mm-hmm.
I was sorry his boy didn't turn out to be the genius that he would like to him have been.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, there's someone has suggested to me that Peter perhaps had some learning disabilities.
He may have had. He didn't seem awfully bright to me.
Whether it was what they call attention deficit disorder now, or dyslexia, or maybe just a lowered IQ, some learning disabled children.
He never
children.
Seemed awfully bright.
Yeah.
I took Peter and I think Iris one day up to the, what's that fair up at? Not Fayetteville, where is that? We have that
Shelbyville?
No, one close by.
What kind of fair? Just
I don't remember. Something we all went up there to see anyway. They wanted to see it. And I took them up there. And he got interested in the most mundane thing instead of anything interesting.
Peter did,
Peter did. He just never was very sharp, I didn't think.
Right.
Like you think. Margaret always was sharp. She's a doctor now.
I understand
she's
that.
She's earned doctorate degree.
Yeah.
So she's pretty sharp.
Now,
Iris been divorced and all that, so she's about what I would expect of her.
Right. Some people, whether rightly or not, might attribute some genetic failing there to what cousins marrying each other.
Yeah, that could be too.
Were they distant cousins or second cousins?
They're supposed to have been distant cousins.
Yeah.
I don't have any trace of
right.
that, but I understand they were distant cousins.
Right.
And maybe before that, the cousins were cousins of somebody's too. You can't tell what
right.
kind of family. But that never came up.
In that European aristocracy.
I can remember an interesting incident one time. Ron Brown and I were taking the Gulfstream from Los Angeles, long flight. We were the only ones on there. We had passengers, the crew and so forth. We sat back there and talked about Saturn V and problems and everything the whole trip. Very interesting. He's interested in the doggonest details all the way through. And all of a sudden, we crossed that last range of mountains out there, and Los Angeles was just over the corner, and all of a sudden, Bon Bon changed. He was, come ahead.
All set.
He, all of a sudden, he's a different person.
Is that right?
He obviously, something crossed his mind. Well, what it turned out that was, this was the time his movie, The Eyes on the Stars, he knew ahead of time
that
he was going to be met by a crowd of people out there.
Mm-hmm.
He was preparing himself for it.
Is that right?
So when he stepped off the plane, he was surrounded. I stepped back and left. And I could see this going to go on. And I was thinking about going on to the hotel because he was going to be there for quite a while. All of a sudden, he stepped out of the crowd and he says, Lee, I'm going to be here a minute. Would you mind keeping an eye on this bag while I'm through? And I said, that's the last I ever saw of him. I still had the bag.
So he just went off with the group.
We stayed at the same hotel, so I took it to the hotel.
And right.
Checked him in.
Huh.
He's something else. But I got thinking about that. What he was doing is really getting ready for what was to come.
Huh.
And he knew it.
Did you... I guess, I don't know if I, put ketchup on my french fries, maybe. Did you ever see him catch any flack, I mean, from detractors or critics in a crowd like that? Or that was a bunch of reporters, I guess, or Hollywood reporters.
Hollywood types and reporters, yeah.
And when that movie came out, there were some snide remarks. Yeah, you aim at the stars, but sometimes you hit London and some things like that.
Yeah.
But you never witnessed
that. I didn't pick up any of that,
right.
I'm sure it happened. I just wasn't in the right place to hear the criticism, I guess.
Sure.
Boy, those potato slices are a meal, aren't they?
Oh, they are. That's some serious slices.
Help them a little bit.
All right, and if you want to get some fries, we can do that.
No, I don't want to. I try to avoid fried foods along with everything else, but I'm not doing a very good job.
I eat very little fried foods myself. My wife never fixes them and fusses at me if I ever have fried chicken.
I didn't realize this was fried, you know, and I thought it was expected to be something else, so I just couldn't.
Now we can get something else if you want. What is this? Oh, a little mayonnaise, I guess. Maybe that wouldn't hurt me too much.
I'll tell you, you're probably interested in stories. I'll tell you another story
sure.
that intrigued me.
All right.
We had a Jupiter launch back when I had a job in the Army close to him. And everybody expected, of course, to be a success like everything else. So there was a party at his house that night to celebrate the success. But the launch was a failure. don't know whether you remember this one, rose up, tipped over, and fell back.
Mm-hmm. Just a very short flight.
Yeah, very short flight. Didn't really get much off the pad. Some enterprising photographer got a picture of it. This is up there horizontal. And that night at the party, gloom and doom kind of fell over the party because here this thing that we were celebrating had been a failure. It's not like Von Braun to let something like that destroy an evening. So he tried to lighten the group. He knew that the one who was hurt the most was Mr. Berm, one of his people,
mm-hmm.
who had developed the payload that was on there. So Von Braun, in order to make a light moment of a tragic affair, got a photograph of the thing up here like this, and he presented it to Mr. Berm in front of everybody and said, "Mr. Berm, isn't your perigee a little low?" You know what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Byrne took the picture, turned around, walked out the front door, and went home.
Is that right?
Didn't say a word. Just took it and walked out.
Hmm.
He was completely crushed. Warner said, "I guess I said the wrong thing." It wasn't any right thing to say, Mr. Byrne.
No. Oh, is that at that time? Hmm.
But no,
that's something.
It shows a couple things. It shows how interested Von Braun was in making it better for Mr. Byrne, which he was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it shows how dedicated some of his people really were. He was absolutely crushed at loss of his payroll.
Mm.
He could never fly it again because that was the only one allotted to it.
I see.
Mm-hmm. He was absolutely upset.
And Von Braun was certainly not trying to put him down. No, no, I mean, just the opposite.
Complete. He was trying to lighten the moment.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Hard to do in a case like that.
Hmm. I've never heard that. That's interesting.
That was at Von Braun's house. Downtown where he used to live. Remember that spot?
Oh, yes, on Big Cove, on Big Cove Road.
Big Cove, mm-hmm. Von Braun had a great attention to detail and a great ability to absorb a lot. When you're down to Cape, and I'm sitting there at the console giving the go or no-go to the launch vehicle, and listening to all the countdown, completely absorbed because that was my job, I would assume that Von Braun and that bunch back there having a good time were not paying much attention to it. Just, you know, casually noticing what's going on.
Right.
Von Braun came out one day and says, "How's the count going, Lee?" He said, "Well, we've had two holes on accelerators, which worries me a little bit." He said, "Yeah, I caught that. I've called the guy that developed them, and he said, don't worry about it. It's all right." You know, I picked it up.
Is that?
Called the guy.
Is that right?
I was always impressed with that.
That's, you were always what?
Always impressed with that.
Oh, yes. That boy, that's staying ahead of the game, and,
I'll tell you another story along that line, and I'm about out of stories.
Okay. I've got a few questions, and then we can also just talk.
I had a bad situation one time. George Miller was the head guy up there. Von Braun, of course, was our boss. And we were launching a nuclear missile. In that old blockhouse down the front down there, and there was a glass room up above, up front, where the hierarchy was sitting. So there was George Miller and Von Braun and Phillips, some of those people.
Right.
Obviously enjoying themselves. You could see them up there. And we were back to the count. All of a sudden, we had a major propulsion problem. Stop the count. When we have a launch like that, I have a room up there at Marshall in Huntsville that holds a couple hundred people, And when you have something like a propulsion problem, you call in all the propulsion experts and see what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we called in the propulsion experts, and it looked like there wasn't much we could do. It looked like the thing to do was to change out the unit and be down a couple of days or 3 days before you could come up again. Walter Cronkite was announcing, and he announced that going to be down for 3 days before we come back up. Von Braun, all of them heard this. I guess I'm kind of brash or something. We kept working with a group of Marshall, and they came to a solution to this thing. We went over and over and over on the telephone. I finally said, is there anybody in the room that disagrees with doing the count if we do this? Somebody answered and said, nobody raised a hand. Everybody agrees. So I started to count.
I was down there.
Well, you
know, that.
Von Braun and everybody hadn't heard this conversation that I'd had, you know. They looked up there, all of a sudden the clock's counting down. Walter Cronkite's embarrassed. He's telling them how it's going to fold up, and all of a sudden the clock's kicking. And they came storming down the hall. Miller got to be first. I'd gone to meet him, tell him what happened. We met in the hall. They said, Lee, what's going on here? I said, George, we've been working this problem up with Marshall, and I did this, 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 and this, and I started to count. George thought about it. He said, he's no snouts, you know, Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Thought about it. He says, tell me again what you did, Lee. This, 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 and this, started to count. He thought a minute, and he says, I wouldn't have done that if I'd have been you, Lee, and turned and walked out of the room.
Now, who did Miller say
Miller
that? Miller, yeah. George
I
Miller.
Looked over at Von Braun, here's what he did to me. I knew he agreed with me.
Is that, he winked real big to
real
you?
Real big, and I let the count go.
I remember.
I think I probably stopped it on Miller's thing if it hadn't been for Von Braun.
You know, when it was the countdown was, well, when the launch was scrubbed, and I think it was later written that it was the only flight that was de-scrubbed. I mean, the scrub was reversed.
That's right.
And Jules Bergman for ABC TV mm-hmm. was there, and Jules usually had a couple of IBM lackeys following him around and a convertible and every now and then a couple of honeys on his arm. Jules jumped in his convertible and sped away from the press site. Most of us didn't bring any cars into the press site. We were bussed in or I forget exactly what. And Jules, so when it was scrubbed, he fled the scene to go have a beer or whatever. And he was driving away when he learned either by phone or on his car radio that the count was back on, and he turns around. By the time he gets back, the rocket is gone, but he still screeches up to the press site and gets his TV crew, and they film him looking up, you know, at the rocket, and then I guess they splice in some long shots that somebody got, and Bergman recreates the launch, and it was long gone then. I put that in an earlier book of some anecdotes.
I had a conversation with Jules after that. It went like this. Do you ever think, Jules said to me, do you ever think what you'd be doing now if that thing had been a failure?
That's a great story. De-scrubbing. Mm.
It's a good story to say what you'd be doing now, too.
Mm. It is.
I'd probably be making little pebbles out of big pebbles or something. But it was that week from Von Braun that took me right. I don't know.
Now, that was so supportive of him wanting to back
and I don't think I could have gone on with George against me if it had been that.
But Von Braun was satisfied with all that you had done.
That's right. He just knew all of it. And I always thought that was a rather odd thing for Stan George to take. He didn't say stop it, count. He just tells me he was not happy with my decision. That's kind of an odd situation, I thought.
In a way, covering his butt. I mean, letting it be known that
I wondered about
he wasn't
that
thrilled with that, but he didn't oppose it so much that he would.
I saw that too.
You traveled a lot with Dr. Von Braun, didn't you?
Pretty
good traveling companion, was he?
Even more. I rode in the carpool with Eberhard Reese every day. I got to know him awfully well. A lot about Von Braun comes out talking to everyone.
Is that right?
Eberhard, I hate to say it this way, but he's funky. Pick up the pieces and put them right after Von Braun gets due waiting. He's warmed up there, you know. Eberhard did that very well.
Just a perfect Mr. Inside, I guess, for Von Braun's Mr. Outside or something.
And he had that job in Peenemünde too, you know. He was second to Von Braun then. He was a good man.
Did Von Braun ever tell you any stories from the Peenemünde?
Yeah,
or
but
Coomer's
I don't think it turned out to be exciting, you know.
Right.
How things went up there, how, you know, like, we had a lot of trouble with the upstairs brass, too. You just don't think you're the only one, or something like that.
Somebody, in the course of my research for the Cummings book, told me about a dinner party once at the Cummings house, and the Von Browns were there, and a few other of the team members. And the fellow telling the story was a member of the family from Massachusetts that owned Lincoln Mills, cotton mills. And this would have been in the 50s, and they were down here visiting. And one of the Germans, they didn't remember whom, told, but they didn't think it was Von Braun, told, but he was present, the story of in one of the V-2 test launches at a time when they were unable to get any money out of Hitler's regime to really proceed with production or advanced development or something. So they were preparing for a launch that they had a lot of confidence in. And they had had a lot of failures before then, and they positioned about 10 motion picture camera men and crews around the launch site at, you know, different vantage points. And it went up in this flawless launch and flight, and all these cameras grinding away. They put together a film with this footage from one launch and gave every indication that these were multiple launches. Look at all these different launches. Because, my God, here were all these different camera angles, and each angle looked different, and it wasn't numbered or anything, you know. And they presented that film to the Hitler higher authority anyway, and it worked. It wowed them. My God, look at all these successes they've had, and they got their money. Makes a great story. Makes a great dinner party story.
Somebody told me once that the time they had that V2 that went up a little ways, came right back down, exploded. All of my mom said, well, boys, back to drawing board.
In German, huh? Yeah, the German equivalent of that. Back to the drawing board.
Excuse me, gentlemen, I hate to disturb you. You didn't want any dessert?
I don't, he does.
Oh,
no, I'm going to pass, thank you.
Sure? Got any coconut cake?
Ooh, thank you.
Tell me what you got, that'll get me.
No, I'm...
His waistline can stand it.
I wish.
These are new tickets that we have.
Yes.
So, one copy is yours if you would like to keep it. And
sure.
You just need to sign it for him.
All right, I'll be glad to.
I think we ought to go Dutch, Bob.
No, this is my pleasure, and it might be the Huntsville Times' pleasure, because I do want to talk some community business with you, too.
I don't feel like I've earned your lunch yet.
No, well, listen, you believe me, it's been helpful.
You said you had some questions. I hope they're good ones.
Well, I hope so, too. Let me take another bite here.
I'll read my bite while you're asking your questions.
All right.
His tail They sure leave mine exposed.
Right. Oh, good point. The Saturn V project involved the greatest complexity, I guess, of any damn large undertaking, it may be, that has ever been done, including this incredible number of components. I mean, the physical...
1 million.
One million parts.
You always said it has 1 million parts.
And I understand you had 20,000 contractors, large and small, or companies involved in the project.
And our budget reached $1 billion a year in Saturn oil.
Mm-hmm.
That was good money back then. That's probably $3 or $4 billion today.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Did Dr. Von Braun ever utter a witticism or say anything that reflected his views about this damned complexity of this project? I mean, it was bigger than big, or that you can recall.
My offhand remark is, I don't think he thought it was all that complex.
Really?
I mean, he absorbed it so well.
Yeah.
He never said anything at all along that line that I can remember.
He was pretty good about visiting contractor plants, wasn't he, and helping with the pep talk? Or
yeah, he's very good. I say he discussed the complexity sometimes in terms of our pay. He said to me one time, Lee, your project alone, which came to me directly from headquarters, it goes through him. He says, your project alone, get $1 billion a year, you make $39,000, I make $39,500.
Is that right? And that was the case then. Would that be right before the flights? I mean, the landing?
About 68.
Is that right? 39,500.
That was his pay, and I was 39.
I guess he made a little bit from his freelance writing and speeches.
Yeah, he made some more.
But
right.
Still, gosh,
he endorsed books, you know, with what's his name here. That they bound to make some little money for
Bert,
him.
Oh, Ordway or Mitch Sharp or
Stewarder.
Sure.
He found to make something from those because they were good books.
But still, I mean,
that's not great money
minor
compared to what
income.
His counterparts in the industry made.
Yeah.
They made real money. People that were our contractors made many times what he and I made.
Right.
But I tell you, the government benefits aren't that bad. I make twice as much now retired as I made working.
Is that right? Well, there's some justice then.
I guess there is. I always reconcile it. You know,
right.
I have no complaints.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Well, good. A little. That's interesting. Let me see. What were you mentioned about how Maria really felt about Hans Bolin?
She just made a few remarks, but I picked them up.
And I've heard something along that line, too, from others, that and she thought a couple of things that people have told me is that, and this is what the Von Browns, or what Maria, let's say, told Hans Villians, that she felt close to, in some cases, they resisted going to large parties of people in Twickenham or whatever who were not connected with the program, you know, in the arsenal, to social events because, she said, we feel that they just, that we're invited there just so they can put them to show us off. That some of the hosts were not that interested in even talking, or maybe the lady, the hostesses, in talking.
I hadn't heard that, but I'm not surprised.
But she has been quoted as saying that we're the stars, you know, brought in, trotted in to show off. And another comrade that
And I don't plan, I'm not going to deal with any of this material unkindly. What some of the Huntsville social hostesses or hostess who might still around be around might
she
not
said
like
at our parties, of course, they're the inner group. I guess that's what she meant.
Yes, she meant
and
the
then you'd
outer
people
group.
To bed, but always a few downtown people, too.
Yeah. And that otherwise she felt that too many of the women of Huntsville were, quote, too housefrau.
Mm-hmm.
Their world was not much beyond their family and home, and that's about all they had to talk about.
That's probably the way she felt.
And she had some broader views than that. How do you think Dr. Von Braun felt about living in Huntsville, this little town?
How do I think he felt?
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd have been quite happy to have been for Maria, my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Von Braun's happiness was his work, I think. He was doing here what he wanted to do, what he couldn't have gotten done most anyplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was, would have been very happy. I heard Maria one time say to me that so-and-so's going to Washington, maybe we will someday or something like that. That's when I realized how she
right.
felt about it. And I think that bothered Von Braun because he wanted to make her happy, of course. It hurt him, I think, to have her wanting to go.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Hmm. It's not a busy place at noon, is it?
No, it's not. Some days, this is the least I've ever seen.
Two ladies with their beer back there.
As I said, all the action on Friday at lunch is downstairs. We'll go there one Friday.
Is you suppose that's got a crowd today?
I bet you it does.
Hmm. If that was translated, I'd like to read it.
Well, you know, I have the English language manuscript, the original I do, and I intentionally left out some plays on words that I didn't think would translate well, the anecdotes that involved plays on word puns or something, but I may have put some in there thinking there might be a German version of that, but you'll be... I'm going to bring out this English language version that will include everything in there and more next year.
You know who Von Braun's secretary was there, Jimmy?
No.
Doretta Slip.
You know, I've gotten to know Doretta.
She's very nice.
I didn't...
Very protective.
Maybe I ought to talk to... she sure is. I was with her at a party with her. I think Rudy had stayed home that night. I think a little under the weather. Maybe I ought to talk with her.
She probably got some stories back there. That didn't filter out any other way.
No. I appreciate your mentioning that. I have never heard, maybe all I got to do is read some accounts. Von Braun went at the moment of touchdown on Apollo 11 on the moon. Was he in mission control in Houston? I talked with him at the Cape on launch morning for Apollo 11,
he
wished him good luck is all I could think to say.
He was mission control at the Cape, I think.
Oh, at the Cape.
I think he went immediately to Houston.
You think he did?
I thought he went immediately to Houston. That's usually what he did.
after launch. I know he was there for launch.
I saw him somewhere during the launch, and he only had that big shindig at the Cape just before, that night before.
Right.
I know he was at that. I was in the state for launch.
But I meant at the moment of touchdown and at the moment of Armstrong's first step, was Von Braun in mission control in Houston for those probably, or do you know?
I guess it's a matter of when he left. I know he was at the gate, and he knew he left for Houston. And it may be that since the big events were going on, he went down there. I just don't know. I had a bad night that night. I went to this party down there, stayed till about 11 o'clock, and went directly to the countdown from there, and was there the rest of the night. I put a lift off the next morning.
Good grief.